Blog Talk Radio.
All right, folks, this is Ramble Rouse and Rich Bergeron.
Yo, tornado, and the Benny Cow. Good, once again, another fourth prediction on the fight.
Oh, you're coming in wicked low. Can you speak up there, sir?
Can you hear me?
Yeah, that's better.
Okay. I said this is the tornado, Tony Benny Cow, with once again another correct prediction on the fight.
Yes. You predicted a TKO, did you not?
I did predict a TKO, and that obviously did not happen. I did predict Cotto would give him a few rough moments, which did happen. But the punches I predicted to be Cotto's downfall would be the right hand and then the uppercut.
Right hook, yeah. Uppercut. That was a good combination for Floyd.
Yeah, I mean, he's landing the right hand, and then you have to move it a little bit. You know, he's landing that, and then, like, the last round, he saw, you know, it was the uppercut, which I think if it would have went another round or two, he may have stopped him.
Sorry about that. Yeah, it was one of those fights that showed Floyd could be a little human, but also showed how he responds to adversity in the ring.
Absolutely. I watched the fight last week. My dad and I, we decided to order it, which was, you know, pretty cool. And we watched it. Alvarez, you know, he looked good. You know, he beat Mosley up pretty good, which was to be expected. Did not stop him, but, you know, Shane's a crafty guy. You know, he's a hard fighter to stop. But Alvarez won. I mean, on my card, I think 11 of the 12 rounds. But it wasn't like it was, you know, obviously Alvarez dominated the fight. But it wasn't like a punching bag marathon. It wasn't like Larry Holmes and Tex Cobb. It was just like, you know, one guy pummeling the other guy.
It was like the tortoise versus the hare is what it was.
Yeah. But it was also, it wasn't like a fight that was so one-sided it wasn't interesting. It was an interesting fight.
Right.
Then we go to the main event. And the main event, it was a good fight. And I was telling my my student here. Mistakes in that fight. One was he was using his jab very effectively, but he was jabbing too much to the head. And when a lot of times if he would jab up to the head, Mayweather would slip to his right a little bit, duck down, and then pivot out of there. And the
Sorry for the delay there, folks. If it wasn't for technical difficulties, we wouldn't have any difficulties at all. Just trying to get Tony back on the phone here. Hello.
Hey,
there he is.
Hello?
What's the last thing you heard me say? Do you remember?
Yeah, I was talking about the fight.
Oh.
I was talking about made there. I mean, he was throwing, you know, jabs and jabs to the head, and Mayweather was slipping to the right and then pivoting around. He was having success with a jab to the body and torso, and it was about even. I mean, the judges had Mayweather ahead, but I had to fight even in for 8 rounds. And then Cotto made the mistake in the 9th round. He actually started backpedaling. And he let Mayweather condole with him. And I thought, you know, that also was part of the downfall.
Yeah, there was definitely some kinks in the photo style there. He seemed to just be walking in with his head down a lot and not really looking where he was punching. And, you know, it didn't seem to help either, because if you notice right after the first round, Cotto goes back to his corner and he's already got a welt over his left eye.
Yeah.
So, you know, that style didn't particularly look to be helping him early on. And then he finally starts coming back, and he didn't seem to have the gas to keep it up, and Floyd just figured out that right hook uppercut combo. Forget it.
Well, when the fight was over and the 12 rounds were complete, I remember saying to my dad, Mayweather won the fight. I said I had him winning 116-112. I said the one thing that kind of concerned me, there was three ways a fight can be judged. A fight can be judged, you know, correctly. You know, dad watches it, no bias, no crowd, no nothing, and he judges it the way it's supposed to be. The other way a fight can be judged is where a guy is expected, you know, to lose. He's expected to be dominated. Most people figured Mayweather was going to dominate this fight. So when Cotto was doing very well for himself, I thought he was going to get more credit than he really deserved because he was doing better against Mayweather than mostly anybody else had ever done, maybe the exception of De La Hoya in the first fight with Castillo. And, you know, he had Mayweather bloodied up a little bit. So he's doing better than he was expected, and he's doing better against Mayweather than most other people do. So I was worried that he might get more credit than he really owned. And I was saying to my dad, I said, it wouldn't surprise me. I said it would be wrong. It wouldn't surprise me if at least one of the judges had it 114-114 a draw. I said it would have been dead wrong. I said, then the other excuse to that is fighter A is expected to win. And the judges go in there giving him rounds because he's a fighter expected to win. And I think that did happen on the one card that was 118-110. That's 10 rounds to 2. And that was not correct. You know, I thought it was 8 to 4. I could live with 9 to 3. 10 to 2, not at all.
Yeah.
And I think that was Mayweather getting some of the really close rounds because he was Mayweather.
I had it 116-112. I actually scored this one. And I, like you, I had it tied after 8, believe it or not.
So basically you and I had the same thing. We both had it even after 8, and we both had Mayweather sweeping the last couple of rounds.
Pretty much.
Okay, so we're in agreement there. Now, the other thing I happened to notice after the fight, and I said this to my dad, I said, I think Mayweather was actually very jubilant that the fight was so tough. I mean, the first thing, you know, he apologized to Larry Merchant. They had their little on-air pickup
test. Fill me in. What happened? I didn't see any of that.
If the fight was over?
Yeah.
When it was over, Cotto left. You know, he went back to his
dressing room. Yeah, speak up there, buddy. You're coming in like a
Maybe it's the problem my lines, and I don't know. But after the fight was over, Cotto left the ring immediately, and then he eventually went on to the hospital. Mayweather was in the ring with Larry Merchant, and first thing he said, Larry, I want to apologize for what happened last time. Larry's the guy accepts the apology. And then they went on, they had a very nice interview. And Mayweather was very relaxed in the interview. You could tell he was very happy. Cotto does not grant an interview, so then they go to ringside with Jim Lampley and Emmanuel Stewart. Mayweather pops up at ringside, throws his arms around both of them, and he's smiling and laughing. I'm like, I think he was happy that the fight was so tough because that takes some of the critics away from him. The critics saying that he had to resort to a cheap shot to beat Victor Ortiz. The critics saying that, you know, Shane Mosley was washed up when they fought. So I think it made him happy that it was that tough. The other thing I got to ask, what the hell was up with his pre-fight entourage?
Justin Bieber wearing his belt? He didn't like that? I was like, who is this? What?
Triple H and Justin Bieber.
Justin Bieber and 50 Cent, believe it or not, do box as a hobby. 50 Cent, I think, is the tougher of the two. Just,
I would say tough.
The tougher guy, that's what I would say, but... Justin Bieber actually boxes. Like he practices and you know, he is a boxing fan. And he's so popular with the little kids, it's like a good thing for boxing to have him associated at any level. Wearing the belts, I don't know. Being in the entourage is one thing, but he's coming in wearing the belts. That was a little over the top, I think.
I really wasn't listening to Justin Bieber. I mean, obviously, he's way past my generation. I know all the little teeny boppers like him and all. But I had nothing against the kid. You know, he's a talented kid, and, you know, he knows how to make money. It was just cracking me up. I'm like, standing there with 50 Cent and Triple H. You know, I'm like, he just looks so out of place. But I'll tell you what else is funny. Maybe I'll take, I think I have a picture of it on Facebook. Whenever I go to like Philadelphia sporting events and I take the public transportation, there is a sign on the subway. There's a local attorney in Philadelphia, like one of those injury attorneys, Justin N. Bieber Esquire. I took a picture of it. I posted it on Facebook. I'm like, is there anything this kid can't do?
Right.
Now, did you hear who Floyd said once that he fights Pacquiao, who he wants to carry himself out for him?
Yeah. It's going to be
fun. Ready for this?
What?
If he fights Pacquiao, he said he plans to have Barack Obama carry himself out. That will never happen.
We'll see about that. Maybe if he doesn't get elected again.
Yeah.
He'll need a job. Well, it'll put him to work. But it was kind of funny. Last week I wrote an article about the Zion settlement. And I mentioned if the Fatidas want to, or if 50 Cent wants to know how to be a gangster, he should go talk to the Fatidas while he's in Las Vegas. He shouldn't be hanging out with Floyd Mayweather. But Floyd, he's going to make money no matter what. You know, when he's fighting, after he's fighting. And you know, I think it was kind of key for him to have a struggle, because the last fight out of Pacquiao we saw was a struggle. And it was kind of like his Marquez, was this fight. And, you know, it exposed him a little bit. It's going to increase the hype engine. But at the same time, I saw one article by a guy over at ESPN saying Mayweather should retire now, which I don't agree with, but, you know. He actually opened the door for it by some of his post-fight comments. But, you know, fighters always feel like that when they get beat up a little. They say, maybe this is it. But I think, you know, a couple of days beyond the fight night, he's just going to be totally focused in a different direction and ready to set up what comes next. The only thing with the timing is, he's mentioned repeatedly, it takes 6 months to make a fight, pay-per-view fight. So I don't think we're going to see it in 2012. I thought we might see it in December, but I think we're going to see what happens with Manny and Bradley. I think it's going to be a much better fight than we've expected. Manny will probably struggle a little bit again, get beat up a little bit, if not, you know, have a really bad night. We never know with a guy who's undefeated like that. But, you know, then that's what's going to start the negotiation process. The negotiations will break down again, and they won't come back to the table again until 2013, and that's when we'll see the fight, if ever. That's my new theory. But I think Shane Mosley did just enough damage and showed just enough of a weakness in Alvarez that Floyd will fight him next, so he can have an undefeated guy, just like Manny Pacquiao just faced, leading into another negotiation for that fight. I think that's what's going to happen. That's why they put this whole card together. It's like a conspiracy, I'm telling you. Shane is there for the specific reason to show the weakness. And it's, you know, boxing math doesn't always work, but every now and then you get lucky. Are we still going here? Can everybody hear me?
I hear you.
All right. I went dead there. I get scared with this connection. So that's my perspective. That's my two cents. I really thought Shane did a great job. He talked about maybe this being his last fight, but I don't buy it, because when we were on the conference call with him before the fight, he said, no way. I'm going to fight until I can't fight anymore. So I take his word on that, and I don't think he's going to hang it up just yet, but he definitely proved himself worthy of, you know, getting the fight, I think. But just showed that his style is a little outdated. His speed over power just does not work. he was looking really good at certain points. I thought he was actually winning some rounds, but the power from Alvarez and just the accuracy was just unreal. He could throw 6 or 7 punches in a round, and Shane could throw 80 jabs, and he would still win the round, Alvarez. Just unbelievable power. And just didn't even have to stagger him. Just looked like he did. He hit him so hard. Go ahead.
Evan Mosley lost that first leg of run of all three and he got knocked down for the first time in his career. One thing I really started noticing from him was when he was fighting somebody that was either taller than him, bigger than him, stronger than him, faster than him, that he would always really, you could tell he was affecting him in the fight. He would get on the outside and he would go and sit for a lot. And, he would initiate the action. So that was,
I thought both fights were better than expected. I really thought, Mayweather would just run away with it against Cotto. And, if you consider the boxing math there, if it was going to be a guaranteed Mayweather versus Pacquiao fight, he would have had to take Cotto out before 12 rounds, before the fight's over. Because Pacquiao took him out in the 12th round, so you got to beat him to the punch, literally, on the decision to do that boxing math and to figure, oh, I can beat Pacquiao. I think their performances against him were vastly different, but, you have to consider that Cotto's grown a lot as a fighter. He avenged one of his losses. I don't think he slowed down at all. But, it's two different times, two different fights, and two different styles of opponents there. And I always thought Floyd was going to get the decision, but I thought there was an outside chance he could knock him out. But he didn't, and he's going to think next about the biggest money that he can make. And, when you get a guaranteed $32 million for a fight like he just did, without even considering pay-per-view and all that shit, and you don't have to fight a Pacquiao, why would you fight a Pacquiao for more if you can get another fight in there before you have to fight Pacquiao? Because odds are, win or lose, you're going to retire after you fight Pacquiao, if you're Mayweather. Right? Why not save it for last? Who else are you going to fight after that? He's already right now saying, who else out there is there for me to fight? And I think in a few weeks, if after the June 9th fight, if it's not Pacquiao, he's going to come up with Alvarez. Like, that's a new idea, even though they almost made that fight before this card came together. And Alvarez knows his role there too. I think he expects it, and we'll see. So Mayweather has to go to jail first, June 1st. So he's going to be writing some letters from a Clark County jail instead of Birmingham jail. I don't know. It's going to be interesting. I mean, maybe they'll do the 24/7 from behind bars. Next fight.
It wouldn't be in the unfamiliar territory for his father or his uncle.
Yeah, there was some interesting background on one of the last 24/7s, I think, or one of the only ones that I watched for this fight, where they were talking about Roger Mayweather. He was concerned about his health and everything. Like, oh, what's the problem? Well, he has diabetes. His father, when he was sick, he had a respiratory illness thing going on. I guess he's better now, but I would have thought the way they were describing it, it was a lot worse than diabetes. But he looks great for having that. But anyway, we also had some mixed martial arts this weekend. Don't want to skip out on that talk. We had the UFC on Fox 3. It wrapped up right in about, I think, a couple minutes over the two-hour period that they promised to have it on Fox there for free. There were only four fights, but the last couple were, you know, they took up a lot of time with the previews and stuff. And probably the most, or the only really controversial fight of the night was Johnny Hendricks versus Josh Koscheck. Hendricks is kind of new to the UFC. He had a tough loss to, it was Ben Henderson. But anyway, Josh Koscheck came in. He did a great job. He, I thought, won the fight, but ended up being a split decision for Johnny Hendricks. It was a real back-and-forth fight. Koscheck actually ended up on top at the end of the fight. He got a couple takedowns here and there that were key, I thought. But there was a lot of back-and-forth slugging and boxing, and Hendricks actually connected probably with the harder shots. But Koscheck, I thought, just won the two rounds that he needed to win. But even Dana White at the end of the fight said that it was very close, and that if anything, Josh would have won the fight if he was more active on top at the end of the fight. So he thought that was what swayed the judges, that he wasn't throwing anything from the top position. But as far as the main event, I was wrong there. I picked Jim Miller to demolish Nate Diaz, and I was wrong big time. Nate looked a lot skinnier, a lot stronger, just a lot more pumped up, and finished the fight in unbelievable fashion. I mean, he roughed him up, roughed Miller up over the course of the fight. It was in the second round, right near the end of the second round, with inside a minute left. And Miller was already pretty badly beaten. He'd been kneed a few times, elbowed, punched, and just looked like it was going to be a long fight for him if he kept trying to strike with Diaz. And then suddenly Diaz ends up getting a guillotine submission when he had only one arm in, like a headlock, on the guy. And then he rolled to the ground and somehow managed to get his legs around him and then get the other arm in for the choke. And it was probably one of the most interesting chokes I've ever seen, because number one, it was the first time Miller had ever been submitted, and number two, he spit his mouthpiece out before he ended up in the choke, so he was actually biting down on his tongue because Nate was holding the choke so tightly. So that was unique. I've never seen a fight finish like that. I mean, literally, just basically Miller said he had my number, and it was true. And you know, that was a rough go of it for him, but that's the way it goes. And Diaz now is going to wait for Ben Henderson. That's who beat Miller, actually, a few fights ago. Was Ben Henderson, not Hendricks. But Nate Diaz is going to fight the winner of the rematch between Ben Henderson and Frankie Edgar. So he's going to be on the shelf for a while, but he's been impressive his last few fights. He's learning a lot. He's obviously improving his game. He's a little bit younger and maybe a little wiser than his older brother, who's still on the outs with MMA right now at the suspension over the marijuana. We also had a couple knockouts on the card. Alan Belcher took out Rusamar Palhares by TKO. And that was kind of an interesting fight because Palhares is like infamous for his leg locks, heel hooks and stuff. The submissions where you grab the foot and twist it, and, you know, you do something funky and the guy is screaming in pain 2 seconds later. A lot of guys, you know, they can tear their ACL or do some major knee damage or, you know, you really ruin somebody's leg with some of these holds if they get them tight enough. And Alan Belcher was ready for that. He's willing to kind of roll around on the ground with this guy while he tried those, and then just ended up knocking him right the fuck out. He just kind of wrapped him up in a big ball and punched his lights out. And then we had the heavyweights. You got to have a heavyweight fight on the free card. It always helps get the fans. We had LeVar Johnson and Pat Barry. LeVar took care of Pat in just the first round there. About 4 minutes, 4.5 minutes in there. And that was a knockout from punches. And then Pat was actually looking good at the beginning of that fight. I mean, if it had been a little less surprising the way he kind of went down after getting his chin checked a few times, then he might have been thrown out if he was gassing or wasn't performing good up to then. But he was really winning the fight. And then LeVard just kind of came out of nowhere and chopped the tree down and they called the fight. The rest of the card was mostly split decisions, or actually unanimous decisions, I should say. There was one submission, Louis Godineau from The Ultimate Fighter, one of the recent shows there, fought John Lineker, and he won by guillotine choke. That was another good guillotine choke shown on the preliminaries there. We had Roland Delorme submitted Nick Dennis by rear naked choke in the first round earlier in the night. And Carlos Demolo won by rear naked choke over Mike Vicenzio also. And then, like I said, the rest of them were unanimous decisions. Dennis Bermudez beat Pablo Garza by unanimous decision. Danny Castillo over John Cholish by UD. And John Hathaway versus Pascal Krauss also ended by unanimous decision. And another Ultimate Fighter guy from the same episode as Godineau, Mr. John Dodson, won by unanimous decision over Tim Elliott. And probably one of the better fights of the night, Michael Johnson versus Tony Ferguson. Guys that were, you know, in the finals of the Ultimate Fighter in different seasons, but that was a really good fight there. Another couple stories coming through the pipeline here. King Mo, who has been a controversial guy in mixed martial arts, to say the least, is all over the news today in wrestling and mixed martial arts because UFC threw him out, and what does he do? He goes over and signs a deal with Bellator and TNA Wrestling at the same time. That is some brains and some smarts. He's a college-educated guy, wrestling college, and he made some waves when the UFC bought out Strikeforce by calling Strikeforce a dying cancer patient, which was putting it lightly for him, I guess. He later got thrown out of the UFC because he referred to a Nevada State Athletic Commissioner as a racist bitch. And just didn't go over well with Dana White, even though he's called people worse on his YouTube rants. But they threw him out. He also had already been suspended when he was thrown out because he had tested positive for some kind of banned substance that he claimed was because of something he took that was over-the-counter supplement deal. We don't know what the deal was with that, but the whole thing with the Nevada State Athletic Commission, one of the commissioners asked him if he could read and understand English, and he took offense to that. I think she was only asking because he was black, and some brilliant reporter out there, I don't know who, from what organization or whatever, finally was able to come up with an example of the same lady asking the same question of a white fighter, and a white boxer, actually, years ago. So it was a common question. It was a standard practice question. It was just, you know, a legal formality that King Mo did not take the right way. He apologized, and unlike other guys who apologized for stuff and got taken back, they didn't take him back. So he went to Bellator and now also TNA Wrestling, which I think is going to send a big message to other guys that, you know, maybe it's not that great an idea to get bogged down with the UFC and not be able to co-promote like you can with these other leagues. So we'll see. And Bellator just basically stole one from, or actually the UFC just stole one from Bellator with Hector Lombard, one of their champions. Just took him right out from under Bellator and signed him to the UFC just this last week too. So this is kind of Bellator's way to get one back from them, even though they threw him out. So we'll see what happens there. But he's on the shelf for a while he deals with his suspension. And I'm sure he'll be wrestling up until then. But it opens up some doors, I think, for some of these other MMA guys who aren't tied down to that exclusive contract with the UFC. I wonder what's going to happen, if people are going to get inspired by this or not, or it's isolated incidents. good for Mo. I mean, he's a great guy from what I know. I know our buddy Scott Casper from Takedown Radio talks to him a lot. And he always tells me good things about the guy, so I kind of take him at his word for it, that he didn't mean to do any kind of banned substance before his last fight. And we'll see what happens in Bellator. I know they're going to make some big moves next year because they're going on the new network. Viacom just bought them out, a big media conglomerate, and Spike TV is owned by Viacom, but they have a year left. They have to the end of 2012 to air their UFC stuff. So they'll be doing that until they get to 2013, and then they can open up with their own reality TV show, and theirs is going to be produced by the same guy who did The Amazing Race. So I think they're going to make a lot of good moves, big moves next year. And that about does it for the results there. What happened? I lost my results. You forgot. Let's see, what else do we have? Oh, did you see the Friday Night Fights special?
I heard it was an absolute disaster.
Dominated the action from the opening round and got the USBO super middleweight title in the main event there. In the co-feature, Sean Eklund, 11-4 with 2 KOs, won a unanimous decision in his first 8-round bout from the 22-fight veteran James Ventry. Second frame. Also, Antonio Canis, 6-0-1, overcame two third-round knockdowns to remain unbeaten in a six-round majority draw in an entertaining fight with Tyrone Chapman, who's 9-1-2 with six knockouts. U.S. Marine Jimmy Smith, who did two tours in Iraq, decked Rafael Jusino in the opening round. The fight got halted after a cut opened over Jusino's eye from an accidental headbutt in the Masters of Wolves contest. And finally, junior New Jersey middleweight Anthony Jones won his first pro fight with a unanimous four-round decision over Bernie Ungway, who was also in his pro debut there. I also got on the call recently, earlier today actually, with the four guys who were going to be in the two co-main event fights for the Strikeforce Heavyweight Grand Prix Final on the 19th, Armed Forces Day, also the same day as Battle of the Badges 4, coincidentally, so you can watch the Showtime fight on tape, because you're going to go, if you're in the New England area, to Battle of the Badges. But that call, we're going to do that call in the last half an hour. It was like a 33-minute call, so we'll play that whole call. But I did want to mention that during the call, I asked a cheese ball question to start to get the blood flowing correctly. Because, you know, if I ask the big questions off the bat, they'll cut me off. I was lucky enough to even get in. I mean, I got a question in. They asked me, you know, go ahead and ask a question. So my first question was to all four fighters. I asked, you know, what's your opponent's greatest strength and how will you overcome it? And all of them answered, some a little longer than others. And then I asked Scott Coker, you know, with the heavyweight division leaving Strikeforce after this and going to the UFC, basically I asked him, do you see a day when Zuffa will fold all of Strikeforce into themselves, you know, or the UFC's owners, I said. Do you see a day when the UFC's owners will fold Strikeforce into their Zuffa operations, basically, is the question. And there was a very uncomfortable long pause, and he asked me to repeat the last part of the question. So I did, and then, of course, as soon as he was done answering, they cut me right off and went to the next question. So that was kind of funny, but he had a slick answer. Basically, said, you know, it's not the end. There's plenty of strong things upcoming, and he was quite the cheerleader for his company. And never give up, I guess, is a good philosophy for them. I think they could survive on their own, but it's going to be kind of like a feeder league for a while. But there was definitely some tension there. They didn't like that question. There was nobody on the panel who was asking that kind of question. You'll see that when you listen to it a little later. We're going to finish up tonight with it. But other than that, we had a couple other interesting stories come through the pipeline. Guess who's back as a heavyweight boxer? Take a wild guess.
Heavyweight boxer. Well, I'm getting a head back.
Yeah, that's another story, but the guy I was thinking of is actually Razor Ruddock, Donovan Ruddock.
Really?
Yes, he's coming back. He is in the late 80s and early 90s. He was the most feared heavyweight on the planet to some.
But, I don't know, I'm 13 years old, and I was a Monday night boxing show on pay-per-view for some reason. It was like $10. Right. And it was Razor Ruddock and Michael Dirk. My dad had me order it.
And he's 48 years old. He's 211 pounds, and he says he's never been in this shape in his life.
211? I don't remember him ever being that late. I always remember him in like the 230, 240 range. Wow.
And I guess, you know, this is no joke. He's coming back. He's going to be in action this Saturday night at the Hershey Center in Mississauga. I don't even know how to pronounce that. Somewhere in Toronto, Ontario. So he's definitely serious about it. He says, I always got by on my ability and trained as hard as I knew how back in the day.
He always got by because he had that destructive left hand.
Yeah. They call it the smash. The smash. He's a special... unique punch that nobody had come up with before him, as far as I know. Right. I remember the first time I was looking at it, trying to do it myself. It's not easy. And it's sneaky. Right. I'm trying to find out here who he's fighting. Doesn't say here, I don't think. Redick is hoping that a busy summer consisting of at least three fights will culminate in a clash with reigning Canadian heavyweight champion Neven Pajkic, whoever that is. Yeah, it's probably not anybody who's a world beater, whoever he's going back and, you know, making his first victim. I don't know. It doesn't say. There's no name. So, we go to our other stories, I guess, for the week here. The David Haye versus Chisora fight. We're going to talk about that. We mentioned it there briefly, but... they're going to do it in Luxembourg or some shit? What is this? Luxembourg? And I guess I read today, just a brief headline, I didn't read the whole story, but something about there's an objection already from the British Board of Boxing Control over this fight. British authority threatens Haye Chisora fight. That's the article. Oh, but it's in another country, so what the hell can they do? Are you familiar with the British Board of Boxing Control?
Yeah,
Mr. Boxing Rain Man? I don't know why it's not coming up right here. Was giving me boxing. Anyway, yeah, they were famous because they had this big brawl after the Klitschko versus Chisora fight there. And Chisora was banned for life or whatever, for indefinitely, I guess, for you know, his actions, not only in the brawl, but he spit water in the someone's face there. No, Vladimir's face, right? He fought Vitaly. So, you know, there was a bunch of issues. It wasn't just the brawl, but they suspended him, and then now he just made this deal to fight the guy he was brawling. And it wasn't just the brawling either. That was the funny part. It wasn't really funny because there was some real violent threats going back and forth between the two of them. I think David Haye said he was going to shoot Chisora, and then Chisora said he was going to stab him. And, you know, their entourages were threatening each other and everything, so it's pretty ugly. A lot of bad blood, and, you know, what better to sell a fight than a hype like that? So, we'll see what happens there. But it's going to be sanctioned by the Luxembourg Boxing Federation. And David Haye doesn't have a license either, so there you go. I mean, I'm sure Bobby Gunn will come in some point and say, let's do it bare knuckle.
There you go.
Like the winner. There's not really much else going on here in the boxing world than the MMA, as far as MMA goes, I know the May 19th fight is coming up. I don't know what the heck is going on this weekend. Let me just jump on over to Sherdog and check that out. Of course, can't forget our sponsors. Might as well mention milifidel.com, MILIFIDEL.com. We had our founder of the company on last week there, and it was a good show. Really interesting story behind the company, and if you want to check it out, just go to MILIFIDEL.com. They got all kinds of interesting gear for men, women, even babies. Get baby clothes for your little warrior. And they call it Mini Fidel for the little guys. Girls. So check it out. And we'll be putting that article out from the interview pretty shortly here. I'm going to get that transcribed and ready to go any day now. But as far as upcoming fights go, we got the Tai Chi Palace Fights 13 going on tonight. Unfinished Business. It's actually streaming live here on SureDog.com. Tomorrow night we got a few events. We got Bellator Fighting Championships 68, Legacy Fighting Championships 11. Bellator is from Atlantic City, New Jersey, by the way, at Caesars. LFC Legacy Fighting is from Houston, Texas, tomorrow night. Cage Fight BRNO, whatever that is. It's going on down in the Czech Republic, over in the Czech Republic, I should say, from my location. Also, we got another fight. This is Saturday now. We got Saturday's fights on the 12th. We got a bunch of them here. Down in Plains, Pennsylvania. Where's that, Tony? You know?
Where?
Plains, P-L-A-I-N-S, Pennsylvania.
I don't know.
Because it's in the country. The Plains. that's going to be a pure MMA fight down there. Thomas versus Bollinger.
Yeah.
We also have, here's a good one. From Lodz, Poland, KSW 19, Mariusz Pudzianowski, the world's strongest man. And worst MMA fighter. No. He's fighting Bob Sapp, who may well be today's biggest and worst MMA flop. He's one of those guys. He's actually got a famous clip for getting punched by Mirko Krokop and crying, literally like crying in the ring. And he's a jacked dude. He's like 400 pounds of jacked muscle. And, to see him shy away like that from one punch, it's pretty funny. It's like one of the funniest MMA clips there are in existence today. So that's kind of a freak show. That's Pudzianowski's home area, though, Poland. So I would think that he's going to win this one. That's not even the main event. The main event is actually Mehmed Khalidov, who's 24-4-2. Fighting Rodney Wallace, who's 12-4. But Pudzianowski is 3-2 in MMA. One of those wins happens to be over our buddy Butterbean. Bob Sapp is 11-11. And I guess there's a couple interesting guys on this card. Matt Horwich, he's got some UFC fights. He's on that card, 26-21-1 is his record. He's fighting Antoni. I don't even know how to pronounce this one. Chmielewski. 22-8 is Chmielewski. I guess they probably butchered that a couple times there. But Marius is 3-2. His last fight was a no contest against James Thompson after he lost to Thompson in May of 2011. I fought him again in November, and no contest because of a judging error after two rounds. And this is the same KSW circuit. This is going to be his fourth fight on that circuit. His first fight on the circuit was his win over Butterbean. Actually, that was his third. So he had the one that I saw where he fought Tim Sylvia. I have on tape, and it's one of my biggest YouTube videos. That was his only fight outside of this KSW organization. Now that I'm looking at his record going all the way back to the beginning. So that was, Butterbean was his third fight. And he fought, before Sylvia, he fought two other ones with that league. Bob Sapp, let's see, what's his last fight? He fought James Thompson and lost. So they had some common opponents there. That's by a leg injury from a submission back in March of this year. He lost to James Thompson. So they're both coming off losses to the same guy. But Sapp, I think, is not going to be the favorite in this one. He's lost 5 fights in a row. And then won one fight before that and then lost 3 in a row before that one. The guy he beat was a guy named Sasha Weinpolter. Nobody that registers with anybody, I think, is an MMA fan. Anyway, that's interesting. So if you're over there in Poland this weekend and you want to see a good fight, go to KSW. See a big, huge guy get pounded out. Beat the crap out of him. I don't know, actually, that's kind of a toss-up. It's kind of like, you know, we'll see what happens. Neither guy can really fight that well, I don't think. They're both overbound muscle heads. Anyway, enough about that one. We got to go to Brazil for the next one, JVT Championship 2 on Saturday. Also, from Santo, Brazil, we got Haidar Capixaba Combat 10, whoever that is. And the Beatdown 10, Battle of the Badges 3 in Denver, Colorado. No relation to our Battle of the Badges, as far as I know. My Battle, My Belt on Saturday from Perkins Regency Hall in McPherson, Kansas. And King of the Cage Nightmare from Santa Fe, New Mexico on Saturday. Annihilation 40 from Colorado Springs, Colorado. Women's Fighting Championship 1 from Casper, Wyoming, WFC. I've never heard of them, but that's interesting. I'll have to check them out. Sunday, of course, we got the Tokyo. We're going to have a Tokyo fight. The Outsider 21 from the Rings outfit. It's going on Tokyo on the 13th. Cage Fighters 2 from Matos Inhos, Portugal. Cage Fighters 2. And then actually the next big event is UFC on Fuel TV 3. The Korean Zombie versus Dustin Poirier. That's all until next, actually there's another one on Wednesday, M1 Challenge 32 from Moscow, Russia. And next Thursday, which happens to be Ascension Day, did you know that?
No, I did not.
Now you know.
Good. I went to Catholic school for so many years.
Yeah, and actually a couple of days ago it was VE Day. According to my calendar. 1945. Alright, but anyway, King of the Cage on next Thursday from Worley, Idaho as well. And then after that, we'll talk about next week. But for the UFC on Fuel TV 3 card, we got Chan Sung Jung, who's 12-3, fighting Dustin Poirier, who's 12-1. And that's the main event there. We got Amir Sadola, 5-3, fighting Jorge Lopez, who's 11-2. Jeremy Stevens is back. He's 20-7, fighting Donald Cerrone, 17-4. That could steal the show. Vince, Iowa friend of ours. I don't know if we ever had him on the show, but I definitely could get him on the show if I wanted to. You know, I made a couple emails. But I think I did meet him down in Iowa when I went down there. He was at the event that I did for one of our first sponsors. Also on the card, we got Jeff Hoagland, 10-4, versus Yves Djibouin, 17-7. Fabio Maldonado, 18-4, fighting Igor Pokrzyjak, who's 24-8. Tom Lawler, 7-4, fighting Jason McDonald, who's 25-15. And of all the McDonald's in the UFC, he's probably got the most fights. Not the best record, though, I don't think. Anyway, Cody McKenzie is also on this card. He's 12-2, fighting Marcus Levasseur, who's 21-5. Dong Yi Yang, who's 10-2, fighting Brad Tavares, who's 7-1. TJ Grant, 17-5, fighting Carlo Prater, who's 30-10-1. That's 41 fights right there. That's a lot of fights. Rafael Dos Anjos, 15-6, fighting Kamal Chalarus, who's a former guest of ours. He's 7-2-2. Hasn't had the best experience so far in the UFC. He had a really bad first fight. Got the crap kicked out of him by Jim Miller, I believe. He just fought, if I remember that one correctly. Yeah. And just last fight, UFC on FX, Diard versus Miller. Lost to a guy named Khabib. I don't even want to try to pronounce his last name, but I'm going to do it. Nurmagomedov. Lost by a rear naked choke. So this could be three strikes you're out for him if he loses this fight. Which would be unfortunate. He sounded like he was going to be hard to beat when we talked to him. But anyway, Jeff Karin also on the card. Speaking of a lot of fights, his record is 33-14-1. So that's almost 50 fights right there. Johnny Eduardo is his opponent, 25-9. And finally, Francisco Rivera, 7-2, fighting Alex Soto, who's 6-1-1. And what do we got for boxing coming up? Do you know? Do you have any idea, Tony? Are you on the ball?
I'm not on boxing. Like I know, unfortunately, we just lost the rematch between Amir Khan and Lamont Peterson.
We didn't talk about the drug test. Drug test. It derailed that whole fight.
Yeah, not always a good thing, you know?
And apparently, I guess, the weird part about the whole thing is that Peterson was the one who asked for the drug test. So, and for him to get popped, I guess it was another Alistair Overeem excuse, it sounds like. He's saying now, from what I read, that it was a medical treatment that caused the adverse result there. So that fight might be completely off. You know, they might not reschedule it at all. We'll see. But I don't know what's going on there. Not good.
No, not good at all. See, this weekend is what? The 12th?
Yes, sir.
Yeah, I don't know if there's anything on this weekend. Next weekend, fight card down in Atlantic City, I still might go to. Two friends of mine are on the card. Harry Yogi's on the card, fighting Jamal Davis out of Philadelphia. That'll be a pretty good scrap. And Chuck Musacchio is on the card, his first fight back after losing Garrett Wilson. Garrett Wilson, a young up-and-coming Philadelphia kid, he had that win over Chucky back in November. He was behind on the card by a couple points, and he was able to land a big right hand and score a one-punch knockout. Since then, he has gone on, and he had a fourth-round stoppage win over a fighter by the name of Pedro Martinez, not the former Red Sox pitcher. And he stopped him in four rounds, breaking his nose. Then he had another fight with a tough kid from Western PA by the name of Andre Taylor. And once again, it was close going into the final round, and he scored a one-punch 12th-round knockout win over Taylor. He's ranked within the top five of the IBF now. And I remember he wrote on Facebook, Garrett's a good kid. You know, he's a short, stocky guy, muscularly built. And, you know, he came out and said, he goes, you know, you named a couple of the world champions. He goes, pick your poison, boys. He goes, I'm coming for one of you. Whoever's got the guts to sign the contract. And I like that. Like, when I first met him, like, he trained at my old gym. But, you know, he started there after I wasn't there anymore. And when I first met him, he was getting ready to fight Musacchio. And I introduced myself. And
I was like, yeah, I kind of trained with Chucky when he was first starting out. He goes, he's a good guy. He goes, I like him. He goes, but I'm apologizing to you in advance. He goes, I'm not sounding cocky. He goes, but I just got to apologize in advance for what I'm going to have to do to your friend. But he said it the whole time with a smile. It wasn't like a mean, arrogant, something like that. It was like very friendly, but at the same time, very confident. And then I saw them both together at the card 2 months later, and they were both joking around and laughing, just two good quality guys. It's, you know, good representations of the sport.
Awesome. So TP's going to AC, huh?
Yeah, very likely. I'm going to try to at least see how everything works out.
No, I'm looking at the schedule here for this Saturday. And I'll tell you, we got a hell of a mismatch of the week. Over in Budapest, Hungary, on Saturday, you want to see a beatdown. We'll see this four-rounder between Giuseppe Lori, who's got 53 wins, 31 knockouts, 10 losses, been knocked out 7 times himself. He's fighting Mihaly Voros, who is 1-2-1. That's a mismatch of the week if I ever saw one.
Yeah, it could be.
Barring absolute miracle, of course.
Yeah.
We got Showtime Showbox on Friday from a place that is not one that I went to while I was out in Vegas, but it's probably not one that I would be welcome if they knew I was there either. Because it's Texas Station Casino, owned by the Ferdita brothers. They've been on ESPN, now they're going on Showtime, trying to get back into the boxing game over at Texas Station Casino. And it's a lot of the same guys that I actually saw over at the Cosmo on another ESPN card. But now it's on Showtime. And the main event there is light middleweights Udell Johnson, 12-0 with 8 knockouts, and Willie, not that Willie, Nelson.
Yeah.
Who's 17-1-1 with 11 knockouts and has probably never tested positive for what Willie would test positive for all the time.
Yeah.
That's the co-main. Well, that's the main event, and then the co-main event is 8 rounders, light heavyweights, Badu Jack 10-0 with 8 knockouts, fighting Alexander Brand, who's undefeated as well with 17 wins, 15 by way of knockout, and featherweights. Guy I've seen before at the Cosmo, Rancev Barthelemy, 15-0 with 11 knockouts. He's facing another not really an opponent here, but another pushover, I think, for him. Robert Oshiobi, 11-4-4 with 6 knockouts. And Barthelemy is kind of a weird fighter. He's like kind of from the same camp as the Petersons. When they throw punches, they make noises. Sometimes he does that. And, real skinny, lanky kid, keeps his chin tucked in real tight. It's a nice form. I actually read for the first time recently that when he was a kid, he was always getting in fights and getting into trouble where he grew up, and so they threw him into the boxing program, and that's where he really thrived. And he actually has a couple family members who are also boxers as well, so it's in the blood. But I don't know if that fight's going to be on Showtime or not. We also have a 6-round light heavyweighter between Unieske Gonzalez, 7-0, 4 knockouts, and Carlos Reyes, 5-3, 1 draw and 3 knockouts. That's pretty much it for that deal. On Showbox, we've got everything else on Saturday, and I don't see a whole hell of a lot jumping out of me right now. We'll go to page 3 here. Let's see what we got. A lot of guys in whose names I don't even want to try to pronounce on the card over in the Ukraine in a place called the Ice Palace. If you're a Ukrainian and you're listening, you can go to BoxRec and pronounce the names yourself. You're probably better at it than I am. Good records, but impossible names on that card. I would hate to be the play-by-play announcer for that one. The easiest one on there is Fuchigami. Everything else is Vili's and Enko's and I don't know, it's a tough one. Let's see, what do we got? We got a little interesting fight here over in the UK on Saturday. Welterweights Martin Geffen, 21-3-1 with 8 knockouts, fighting Stuart Green, 17-12. That's not really that great, but that's not me in that over there. Also in the UK on Saturday, Kid Galahad, who's a super bantamweight, 11-0 with 4 knockouts, fighting Josh Wales.
Knights of the Round Table.
Knights of the Round Table, yeah. Different guy. Maybe a descendant. Maybe that's why he calls himself that. But he's fighting Josh Whale, who is spelled W-A-L-E, 14-3 with 1 draw, 7 knockouts. Super bantamweight, WBC international super bantamweight title on the line there. And another welterweight fight between Colin Lines, 36-9 with 12 knockouts, and Junior Witter, who's 4-5-2 with 22 knockouts. On that card. And that's for the BBB of C British welterweight title. And here's a guy who is considered. There's a guy on in this card fighting a light welterweight fight against Justin Newell, who's 2-0. Johnny Greaves. He's 3-79. It's a record
what?
Above. And that's not even the worst record on this card either. Guy that's debuting, Sam, or the guy that's debuting in a 4-round lightweight fight that night. He's fighting a guy named Christian Laet, L-A-G-H-T, who's 6-120 with 6
wow.
draws.
So basically, at 132 fights, he has only not lost 12 of them.
Exactly.
Wow.
That's what you call a career opponent. There's 3 of them on this card. There's another guy. Actually, he's not really a career opponent. Looks like he might have started off well. Won 2 of his last 6. But another guy, I don't even want to even try to pronounce his name, but he's 21-49 with 3 draws on the same card. And then we can't forget our friends, Brittany Rogers and J. Russell Peltz, working together again down in Newtown, Pennsylvania, this Saturday.
Yeah, you're right, and I totally forgot about that, and I apologize. I can't go this weekend because I had already pre-committed and bought tickets to a baseball game, which I really don't want to go to now, but I got some friends going, so I'm just going to get drunk. You know, I was talking to Brittany about this, and the one thing I joked about it, I said it's going to be the Newtown Athletic Center, which I actually passed last week on my way to a funeral up there, that military funeral I went to. And the Newtown Athletic Center was where I made my ring announcing debut back in 1998.
There you go.
Yeah.
Well, that's going to be a good fight. The new Ray Robinson is going to be involved there. He's in the main event again. Let me find it again.
The guy who's fighting is a good fighter, Terrence Heath Coffin. Terrence, you know, he's been a pro for 16 years now. He was in the 96 Olympics team. I don't remember if he medaled or not. If he did, it would have been a bronze medal. But I remember Terrence out of Camden, New Jersey. Because he was from New Jersey, he basically trained in Philadelphia. I watched him fight at the Blue Horizon on a couple occasions. It was before I started covering the shows, before I started working with Fight News Unlimited, so I don't have any reports on him. I've seen Terrence fight on several occasions. He's a good fighter. He's a nice test for Ray Robinson. Ray looks great in the fight against Guzman back in September. I covered that fight. That was Brittany's first card, and he looked fantastic. You know, he picked him apart and he stopped him. But his last fight, he struggled a little bit against and the guy's name's escaping me right now. So Joel Cascarillo or Cascarillo or something along like that, who was just a straightforward pressure fighter. He has this Cascarino has a win over Dennis Mondesmore with Delcon, who we interviewed about a year ago.
Just had a birthday. Dennis Duglin.
What?
Dennis Duglin just had a birthday.
But yeah, this guy Cascarino had a win over Duglin because he was just so straightforward with his pressure. Doesn't use his jab, he just comes straight in and he got to Dennis. Ray had to literally get on his heels, and he had to move. I mean, because Cascarino has, like, no movement whatsoever. Now, what you're going to see in this fight with Terrence Coffin, I remember going to a Terrence fight where the first round, he literally, like, was on his bicycle moving, using footwork, looking almost like, you know, like Apollo Creed with dancing moves, and then he started settling down. Now, what we're going to have here is two southpaws that like to use movement. So what you have the potential of is a chess match, a fight where each guy is going to try to make the other one commit first. It's going to be an indication on who can force the other guy to be the pressure fighter. The fighter that I think in this fight that's going to have the advantage is going to be the guy that makes the other one come forward. Because these are guys that are both natural counterpunchers, they're both southpaws, they both have good movement, and they both like to fight from the outside. You have the potential of a fight that's not entertaining. I hate to say that. But then get on the same line, if you got a guy like Ray Robinson, who is progressing his career, and Terrence Coffin is the perfect next step up for him. You know, Ray's last two fights were against slower, pressure-type fighters that came straight in. And he's going to have the exact opposite in a fight with Coffin.
Nice.
Terrence has obviously seen better days. So it's interesting to see how much he's got left. And, you know, it could be, I'm not saying it could be entertaining, but it could be interesting.
Well, Robinson is 13-2 with 5 knockouts. Coffin is 36-7 with 9 knockouts. And it's going to be for the vacant USA, Pennsylvania State welterweight title, as opposed to the vacant Russian Pennsylvania State welterweight title, I guess. Is there a Pennsylvania in Russia? I doubt it. Anyway. That's actually... not the only fight on Saturday. There's also the Irish Invasion going on in Poughkeepsie, New York. It's Snooki's little deal down there with the boxing promotion. Snooki, I think, shut up at one press conference, but it's from what it sounds like, it's all her dad's doing. Her dad has got to be the one that's the real boxing fan in the family, because I've seen Snooki fight, and she does not box well. But she's you know, the face of the company. She's calling her Team Snooki Boxing and running with it. And she's latched on to the Highland brothers. And Patrick is undefeated here. He's going to be the main event at Super Featherweight. He's 25-0, 11 knockouts, fighting Frankie Archuleta, who's 27-9, one draw and 14 knockouts.
Frankie was a good prospect back in the day, but he's definitely on his better days.
And, of course, it wouldn't be Team Snooki if you didn't have a female fight, I guess. We got Natasha Spence, who's 3-0-1 with 2 knockouts, fighting a super featherweight 6-rounder against Raquel Beetle Bailey, who's 1-1-1. I don't know if her nickname's Beatles, but Raquel Bailey.
I thought it was real. I was laughing.
It should be her nickname. That'd be funny. Super featherweights Chaz McDowell 5-1-0 with 1 knockout, and Uniel Ramos 1-6-1 are also on that card. And that's about it for the good fights. Then we go to go to Sunday, I think, from there for the next best fight on the list here. Card, I should say. Sunday. We have Brian Hawaiian Punch Valoria. That really is his nickname. 30-3 with 17 knockouts, fighting Omar Nino Romero, who's 31-4 with 2 draws and 13 knockouts. That's from the Manila, Philippines, Metro Manila, Philippines. It's going to be the thrill in Manila at flyweight here for these guys. And also bantamweight fight between Dyer Gubatong, 17-1 with 2 draws, 8 knockouts, and Dado Cabin Toy. What?
That's a fucked up last name.
Cabin Toy, spelled just like it sounds. 9-2 with 2 draws and 4 knockouts. That's for the WBO Oriental bantamweight title, by the way. The Valoria fight is also for the WBO flyweight title, by the way. And another flyweight fight is pretty interesting is on this card. Rodel Mayol, 30-5 with 2 draws, 22 knockout wins, fighting Julio Cesar Miranda, who's 37-6-1 with 29 KOs. So that's a very interesting fight there. It's going to be on United States Dish Network and United States In Demand, so you will be able to watch it in the States here if you know how. And another fight in the Philippines on Sunday. Super featherweight Roberto Gonzalez, 20-0 with 11 knockouts, and Ryan Sermona, 12-3 with 6 knockouts. Main event from Mindoro Oriental, Philippines, wherever that is. And finally, Wednesday, next Wednesday, we have a fight here. Big female fight. Even though it's kind of seems like a mismatch on paper, but you never know. So it's two interesting fights. Got a female fight that's the main event, and then the heavyweight fight with some big names. Well, one big name, but it's not the main event. It's co-main event. Everything else is TBA, so we don't even know what's going to happen. But anyway, Wednesday from Brandenburg, Germany, we have flyweights, 10-rounders here with Susie Kentikian. He's 29-0, 16 knockouts, looking for her 30th win here, against Melissa McMorrow, who's 6-3-3. And this is for the WBO female flyweight title, the WBA female flyweight title, and the WIBF flyweight title. That's the Women's International Boxing Federation. And also on the card, 10-rounders, heavyweights, Francesco Pianetta, 25-0-1. With 14 knockouts, fighting Franz Bosa, 48-7-3, 29 knockouts. So Razor Ruddock is coming back, and Franz Bosa is still fighting too.
Never left.
Yeah, basically keeps coming back out of the blue. And the only other thing that's coming up next Thursday, and we'll talk about that next Thursday night, I guess. So that's boxing for you. And by the way, the guy that you were talking about earlier against the new Ray Robinson was Doel Carrasquillo.
Yeah.
16-18 with one draw. I think Coffin's going to give Robinson fits. I'm going to really test him out. We'll see. But with that, I think we're going to call it a night. I want to thank again our sponsors, drinkcocaine.com. I didn't mention them earlier, but check them out too. And Milifidel, MILIFIDEL.com. Go buy some gear for you, yourself, or your significant other, or even your little one with the Mini Fidel line. And then we're going to play the Strikeforce conference call from earlier today to end the show. So listen in, stay tuned for that. It's Josh Barnett, Gilbert Melendez on the call, Scott Coker. We also had Daniel Cormier and Josh Thompson. So listen, and until next week, I guess that's it for us. We'll have some guests next week.
Yeah, well, I got a few people that are interested. I got some emails with their info.
We also got to do something for the big Battle of the Badges show, so we're going to have at least one guest for that. So,
yeah.
If you can get another guest, that'd be great. I'll try to get somebody for 8:30 if you can get somebody for 9:15.
Okay.
Let's do it! All right. Well, we'll be in touch. Thanks. first out, bye, folks. Thanks for a great show. TP, enjoy your stay in AC.
All right, I'll try.
Here we go. Strike Force conference call from earlier today.
Performance of the fight. Thank you. Yes, Strike Force on Showtime for many years to come.